You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Music tells a story sometimes. Sometimes the instrument playing the music has the better story. The movie The Red Violin was all about a prized instrument.
Who will start us off? 600,000, 1,100,000, 2,400,000. Sold!
Stolen, recovered, and stolen again. The most perfect violins often have a lurid backstory. Frank Almond's priceless 1715 Stradivarius called the Lipinski Strad has a new story added to its legacy. Almond is the concertmaster of the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, and after a concert, he stepped into the parking lot and was robbed by a man with a stun gun and a burgundy minivan getaway car. Violins hold a special place in the world of high art theft. Rare, coveted, but almost impossible to unload on the black market. Take the case of the Marini Strad, a Stradivarius stolen in 1995 during a burglary when the owner was in the hospital. It has never been recovered. Robert K. Whitman, former FBI special agent with expertise in art, jewelry, and other cultural property, is the author of Priceless, How I Went Undercover to Recover the World's Stolen Treasures.
Well, you know, there's many violins that have been stolen over the years. There's a site that lists 27 different violins that are missing at this time. The FBI really right now has, I believe, 11 that have been reported since 1985. Three of those were Stradivariuses, and I believe two are still missing. So, and anytime you get involved in artifacts or art that's worth the type of dollars that these things are worth, then there are individuals and groups out there who are looking at ways to try to monetize that.
Now, who is a candidate to either steal one of these or to buy one of these discreetly?
Well, that's the question, John. You know, in almost 25 years of doing these investigations, I've never really run across a investor who's out there paying a lot of money for stolen art. And, you know, that's kind of a theory that's been out there for many years, since the early 1960s. And it's a result of a movie that was done with James Bond called Dr. No. And James Bond goes into the lair, the cavernous lair of Dr. No, and he walks through and he sees a painting. And it's on an easel, and actually the painting was stolen the year before. It literally was. And he looks at it and says, with a questioning look, like, I wondered where that was. And ever since then, people think that there's this Dr. No out there who's enjoying these stolen paintings and violins. And quite honestly, I've never seen that happen. You know, these individuals who steal these things, basically they're looking to monetize them. They're trying to make money. And they're thinking, you know, we'll get something very valuable. But the problem is they don't think about what they're going to do with it. So they're better thieves than they are businessmen.
Well, but is there the possibility that there are these secret galleries, you know, down underground that billionaires go to look at their, you know, Vermeer next to their Van Gogh, next to their stolen whatever?
You know, anything's possible. I can't say that, you know, it doesn't exist, but these individuals who have the wherewithal to buy these paintings. Let me give you an example. I did an undercover operation with the Swedish National Police and the Danish police back in 2005 when we recovered a $35 million Rembrandt that had been stolen at gunpoint from the Swedish National Museum in Stockholm. Now, while we were doing that, we were offering $250,000 in cash for the actual painting to buy it back. Of course, it was a buy-bust scenario. Well, there you go. You're paying $250,000 for a $35 million painting. So it gives you an idea what the black market quote values would be. But even $250,000 is a lot of money when you consider the fact that it's not worth anything because you can't sell it, you can't monetize it ever again. And if you get caught with it, you know, you might go to jail for receiving stolen property.
Let's talk about the violins for a moment. I mean, there is the possibility, unlike a painting that you just put on a wall, that, you know, some crazed virtuoso would love to just have that violin to play and to hear the sound. Of course, no audience. And I suppose you could play it in public, but you'd have to be pretty darn careful taking it out. In the case of the David Marini Stradivarius, it would seem that even putting something in your own closet isn't safe enough from the thieves who know where these Stradivariuses are and when they might be available for the picking.
Well, the Davidoff Marini was a little different story. The artist was actually in the hospital at the time. You know, my theory on that is that it's being held somewhere. The person who took it may not have even known that it was a Stradivarius. It could be someone who was cleaning the room, a maid, someone who went in, saw the violin in the case and just took the whole thing with her. Many of the violins that are stolen are not Stradivariuses. I mean, just the fact is that, you know, we hear about the Stradivariuses because they're so famous and because they're so valuable. But many of the ones that are taken are just violins that are taken, you know, happenstance as crimes of opportunity.
So you think a sort of a dull-witted burglar in the Marini case it was just sort of stumbling around the apartment, ripping stuff off, and found this violin and said, oh, let's take the fiddle, and they had no idea what they had?
That's a possibility. I mean, from 25 years of doing these investigations, many times the thieves who take these pieces are not really all that well-versed in the art itself or in the artifacts that they're taking. Basically, they recognize them as valuable and think that they can monetize them. But, you know, in this last case, in this Lipinski case, it's a little bit different. The fact that this one was premeditated, thought out. Obviously, the thieves knew the schedule of the concert master from the symphony in Milwaukee and knew that he'd be coming out of the concert at that time. And the fact that they parked their car next to his, so they identified his car, they knew what car he was driving. So that shows you a premeditation that was done in this particular case.
Sounds like a little sort of mini version of Ocean's 11.
Could be. You know, throughout the years, I've seen these individuals, these criminals, they do a good job of planning the theft. They really, they go out and think about it. They case the operations for many months. They know what they're going to do.
What's it like to put your eyes on something that you've been searching for a long time, that you know you're close to, and then you finally actually see it?
Well, it's an amazing moment. It's happened to me many times and working undercover in these cases. And the only thing I can say about that is that at that moment, it's a eureka moment. You know, for a few minutes, you kind of float around. It's almost like feeling when you have children born and you know how for a week your feet don't touch the ground. Well, when you see something like that and finally get it back, for a few minutes, it doesn't last as long as when your kids are born, but for a few minutes, it feels that way.
Which ones do you remember most, if we can think about your art kids?
Well, that Rembrandt in 2005 was amazing.
Where was that?
We recovered that in a hotel room in Copenhagen, Denmark, after negotiating with the thieves from Stockholm for a number of months. And finally, they brought it to me, and we were able to identify it and return it.
And what do you do? Do you say, thank you very much, or you show them the cuffs?
Well, I'm usually running down the hall with the painting at that point, and I let the SWAT team go in and show them the cuffs.
And just pray that you don't fall down, right?
Oh, man's got to know his limitations, John. as Clint Eastwood once said.
Robert K. Whitman, former FBI special agent in art, jewelry, and other cultural property recoveries, the author of Priceless, How I Went Undercover to Recover the World's Stolen Treasures. Thanks so much.
John, thanks for having me here.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.